Hey, everybody. What a terrific conversation I just finished with my friend Greg Mitchell from AVP Ventures in Peru. So we went from Los Angeles to Lima, Peru. And if you are interested at all what it's like to build venture capital business in a developing economy, what's going on specifically in the Peruvian entrepreneurial economy, or just what it takes to take an innovative, bottoms-up, people-centric, positive, long-term approach to building from a venture fund to a venture firm to a local and regional organization that can help build a venture economy, you're going to want to enjoy this conversation with Greg. So I hope you dive in. I hope you enjoy it as much as we did making it, because this was one of the most enjoyable conversations around the venture capital entrepreneurial economy of Latin America with an entrepreneurial thinker like Greg Mitchell that I've had in a long time. So have fun. Hola, hello, hi, bienvenido, and welcome back or welcome to Entrepreneurial Thinkers. Today, I am honored to be making this long in the making conversation happen with my friend Greg Mitchell from down in Lima, Peru. So I'm going to tell you a little bit about Greg and his background before we welcome him into the show. And then we're going to have an amazing conversation about all things venture capital, Latin America, Peru specifically. We're going to really highlight Peru. So Greg's a seasoned venture capitalist living in Peru with a passion for connecting capital to innovative companies across all of Latin America. He's got over 15 years of experience in investing, corporate finance, and economic development in the region. And he brings a wealth of expertise to the table, every table, no matter the table, no matter where it is. As a managing partner at AVP Ventures, the first venture capital firm in Peru, Greg has led investments in numerous successful startups spanning fintech, edtech, HR, and various enterprise technology sectors. Notably, he played a key role in achieving two successful exits so far, including Kukli, and he can correct my pronunciation of that later, acquisition by Banco de Crédito de Peru. Greg's distinction or dedication extends beyond investments as he actively mentors high-impact entrepreneurs through organizations like Endeavor Peru. We're also going to dive in and talk about how important it is at the firm that they mentor and kind of bring along the next generation of venture capitalists and investors. He's got a Wharton MBA and a Lauder Master's in International Studies. And as such, Greg is uniquely capable of bridging the gap between the American investment acumen and requirements and the ever-changing and growing landscape of Latin American business. So, Greg, my friend, bienvenido. Welcome, buddy.
Thanks very much. I appreciate you having me. It's fun to talk with you.
No, always, always. We are longtime social media / online digital friends turned podcast collaborators today. So we're going to have a great time.
I'm believers in the power of positive thinking and mutual support. It takes a village. So
that's it, man.
I think your positivity has rubbed off on me. That's for sure. I'm trying to spread that to Peru as well.
That's the mission, man. I'm all in on that. So I'm super excited. I'm grateful to have you join us today. We've got a bunch of things we're going to talk about, some of which I teased already in the intro. But I want to go kind of big picture, deep dive question right out of the gate. Why do you think entrepreneurial thinking is so critical to growth in Latin America?
Because the solutions need to come from Latin America. I think there's a tendency to try to learn from developed markets, US or Europe, and then apply. There's already so much top-down push, mandate about this is what developing markets should do. This is what Latin America should do. These are the world problems, so now we can solve them in Latin America. But it's not going to work if we just take what people in the developing world are saying. The solutions need to come from us in Latin America. So that's why this, when you say entrepreneurial thinking, what I'm thinking of is like kind of like brainstorming, getting together, and people that live in Latin America are experiencing the problems. So they need to be ones that solve the problem. It's like when we invest, we like to invest in founders that come from the industry and have seen the pain point on the other side. And now they said it was so strong. They're like, I can't deal with this pain point. I need to build the solution. So it's like, we have a lot of pain points in Latin America. We need to be the ones that create the solutions for us. It can't be just some cookie cutter from someone else's idea or need or thesis.
I love it. And I 100% concur. I used to say, as I barnstormed around Latin America from 2015 to to 2020, right up to the lead of the pandemic, I used to always say, like, hey, you want to go global, right? Because every young entrepreneur or older entrepreneur, right, didn't matter the level they were at, they always wanted to go global, right? They always wanted to, if they were in South America, they wanted to get to the Mexican market, and then they wanted to get to the US, and they wanted to get to Europe. Right. And I always used to just say, like, you want to go global, go local.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, tell me if you can identify with this. I was in we were running a program, helping a group run a program in Mexico at one point, and a couple of kids, young entrepreneurs, aspiring entrepreneurs, right, were lamenting the fact that they hadn't come up with a great idea. Right. And I said, here's the exercise that I always suggest to people. And this would apply anywhere, but really in developing markets, right? I was like, you're going to take the bus probably home from campus today. You're going to take the bus back to campus tomorrow for the next day of the program. Take your little notepad of paper out while you're on the bus there and on the bus on the way back. And just look at the things that you see and the problems that you see as you're on that bus trip, and just scribble them all down. No filters, no thought processes, no, like, is it a big market? Just write them all down. Right. And then when you come in, I bet you'll have a list of probably 30 or 40 things. And I said, I 100% promise you that there are 6 or 8 great business opportunities inside of that list of things.
Yeah. 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 Just a matter of being a little bit more observant, realizing that we're living here. So solutions come from us, and we need to start being more observant about problems that, it can be solved, not just accepting the status quo.
Yeah, totally agree. All right, so let's do this. Let's back up a little bit to give the audience some context. What's your story, man? Like, how did you wind up in Peru?
Yeah, I probably shouldn't be here. I mean, I grew up in Connecticut in the U.S. There's no reason why I should be speaking Spanish. But for me, I think learning Spanish has become like a life journey for me. This is what has been the creative, artistic side of my life. I wouldn't consider myself a creative person or an artistic or musical person, but I decided that learning one language well would be that part. So I think that was kind of the first step. Partly because of that, I decided to serve in the Peace Corps in the Dominican Republic. So after college, I lived in the Dominican Republic for 2 years.
Okay.
I was, you know, besides serving people in the Dominican Republic and sharing cultural experiences with them as an American, I did want to use that time to improve my Spanish vocabulary and pronunciation, because I'd gone through like a lot of the Spanish language book smarts that many people in U.S. High schools and colleges do, but I still couldn't speak Spanish. So I needed to, that was like a life goal for me.
Yeah.
And then, so once that happened.
Took it out into the field, literally.
Yeah. And then once that happens, kind of one thing led to another. I'm kind of more of an intentional person. So I really wanted to build off it. It wasn't like, okay, I learned Spanish, now I want to learn Japanese. No, it was like, okay, I learned Spanish, now what can I do with this tool in my life? So, I kind of took that when I went back to school for this, you mentioned this MBA and master's. It was the idea is to combine the business with Latin America, Spanish speaking Latin America, business proficiency, cultural and business proficiency.
So here's this East Coast guy, Connecticut guy, does his public service, which, by the way, kudos for that. That's a whole other podcast we could do about the importance of national service, I think. But so does his public service in Central America, right? And is pursuing the language, the whole process through, goes back to the States and east coast, east side of the country, like gets his MBA. But at that point, you're eyeing a return to Latin America with all this knowledge plus more Spanish.
Yeah, I think the purpose of this going to school was coming back to Latin America. And specifically working in the private sector. I worked in the public sector, obviously, with the Peace Corps, U.S. Government. And I wanted to, work in the private sector and also have that experience. I wanted to become an investor in emerging markets. So there's a lot of people I knew that I could have done that in New York or other cities in the U.S. Other people do that. But I felt like if this was like a long-term career path for me, so I wanted to start with on-the-ground experience. That would be like the best way for me to become an emerging markets investor. So
it's incredible.
I'm still in Lima. I still feel that way. And I've been, I've been grateful for this path.
How long have you been there now?
13 years.
That's incredible. Good for you. Mm-hmm. What an amazing adventure. for what a creative adventure for a guy who says, I'm not a creator, I'm not the artistic type.
Right.
You carved out an artistic path for yourself in your own life.
Right.
Much like I say, this type of stuff, this work, the social media or the content stuff is my art. This is my art. This is, I can't paint. I can't sing, maybe a little. I can't play music.
Right.
But this is my art. You've used business as your canvas, basically. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. I mean, most Connecticut guys, when they say, well, I'm going to migrate south, they just mean Florida. And it's only for the winter. Then they go back. Right. So good for you. Okay. So, all right. So here you are. Investor in emerging markets, living in this emerging market. So let's unpack that for our audience. Like, I want you as best you can to help us really hone that in on Peru, right? Because everybody can talk about Latin America, and please do. But the unique thing is that you're experiencing this, your vision and your sense of the evolution of venture capital in Latin America, say over the last 10 years, right, is obviously very Peruvian centric, although you, again, operate in the region. So talk to us about the Peruvian entrepreneurial economy. Talk to us about the Latin American entrepreneurial economy and maybe how it compares both favorably or at a disadvantage to the U.S. or to Europe.
Okay, great. Well, Peru is a very entrepreneurial country. A lot of Peruvians pride themselves on being entrepreneurs or having like a side gig. And there's a big informal labor market ends up meaning a lot of small entrepreneurs. So I think people pride themselves in Peru on being entrepreneurs. But we also in Peru have a big city. It's like the top five city in Latin America. Lima is 10 million people. Over the last 20 years, a big migration towards Lima. So there's been like a growing middle class and growing urban density.
Okay.
So this also results in a lot of entrepreneurship and activity and upward social movement needs for education, financial services, and all these things. At the same time, there's huge inequality. Most of the economy is dominated by a few business groups. And, the upward mobility channels or avenues like education, for example, is still not the quality that or like formal jobs. That's still not the quantity and quality that's needed to really, mix up, create social mobility and deal with equality. Also, I think maybe you mentioned comparing to other countries. That's harder for me because I've been living in Peru, so sure. I'm hesitant to compare. But I feel Peru is isolated. Mm. We don't share a border with the U.S. We're in South America. And I think our mindset is somewhat isolated and detached. And I think for, bigger markets, U.S., Europe, Peru is just, it's kind of like the number five country or six in Latin America. And then it's also South America. So it's kind of like just beyond the interest level of people. And, it's far. So
it is far.
yes. I think there's an isolation factor that also, makes it tough for us.
No, I would agree. Let's do this if we can, because we've got lots of folks that listen that are from the region and from different parts of the region. So in my experience, right, I lived neighborly to Peru. I lived in Chile for about a year. I lived in Santiago, right? There's a lot of crossover between the Peruvian kind of economy and the Peruvian culture as a whole and the Chilean culture. Let's just, if we can, if you have any context, maybe just compare those two, right? So Chile, for a bunch of frankly, sadly, wrong reasons, is probably more in the consciousness of American history than Peru is. But, and the Chileans have done a nice job of kind of marketing themselves to the American market or to the West, so to speak. So, like, how do we compare the Peruvian entrepreneurial economy or economy in general with the Chilean experience? Because I can validate what you said. Same levels of inequality, same levels of kind of elitist control of certain segments of society. In Chile, I think we always used to call it was like the seven families that controlled kind of, 80% of everything. And then obviously with 2018, 2019 in Chile, they saw the beginnings of the backlash of that inequality and those problems. So maybe let's compare a little bit of the two just to give people some context.
Well, I mean, first off, I think there is a lot of communication and collaboration, especially within the startup community and entrepreneurial community. I think Peru is a destination for many Chilean businesses. So there is a lot of overlap in business. Maybe that's like the closest, obviously there's a border, but also like the most overlap in the business sector. But what I'm thinking is that we're following the path of Chile. One of the first entrepreneurial initiatives I learned about was Startup Chile.
Right.
And we have now something in Peru called Startup Peru. So
okay.
I think that's one example. But I see in South America, Chile being a leader in public policy to promote entrepreneurship, not just public policy, but money behind that. So I think that, you know, in some ways, Peru has followed in a positive way those initiatives. And that's kind of helped also the collaboration as well between startups. And Startup Chile is very open. So many Peruvian startup founders have gone through the Startup Chile program.
Yeah, no, that makes sense as well. Not surprising. Curious, you've been there for a while, right? 13 years. Mm-hmm. If you went back... When would you pinpoint kind of the advent of or the beginning seeds of venture capital in Peru? Like when would you put that on the calendar? 10 years ago?
Yeah, yeah.
8 years ago?
I think 10 or 11. I wasn't there right at the beginning, but it was you know, around the time that I did arrive to Peru. The first players were Waira, Telefónica Accelerator, and Endeavor. Those were the first organizations that I got in touch with. And my first entry to the startup community was as an Endeavor mentor and as a UTEC Ventures mentor. UTEC is a university that has a top accelerator in Peru. So
gotcha.
I would say those I would identify as kind of the top first movers. And then people like me benefited from them because it was a way for us to meet with founders and understand what was happening.
Yeah, no, yeah, makes sense. Okay, so here's the blatant commercial opportunity for you. So you're the managing partner at AVP Ventures. Tell us all about AVP Ventures. What is it? What do you invest in? What are you focused on? What's the story of AVP?
Thank you very much. Well, with AVP Ventures, with my partner, Elizabeth Acuña, we have built a venture capital firm in Peru. And we've been very intentional through this journey. You know, I mentioned both of us, but there are people that came before us that still support it. We're a community. Our goal and our our strength is being a nexus of a community. So our investors were probably the first the people that started AB Ventures in terms of the money and the social trust that got us going. So we just didn't have to start from zero. So there was already kind of this group of interested, somewhat active angel investors that wanted to figure out how we could put this all together. So, you know, Elizabeth and I had an opportunity and a charge to formalize this into a firm and a fund structure, which is what we've been, what we're doing. And, you know, I think that was important for our DNA is to have a lot of stakeholders involved, a lot of people involved. Because at the end of the day, we lead seed stage rounds in Peru and Latin America. That's our goal, to be like a force in these rounds as an added value for founders. So that starts from the beginning when we start meeting with them. We want to help them meet with investors, create momentum for their investment rounds, be the type of investor that, you know, can act with some conviction in the startups we invest in and get other investors on board so they can as quickly as possible raise a seed round.
That's terrific. On average, how many companies in the portfolio or how many companies do you invest in every year?
We have 17 companies in our Fund One portfolio. That fund is a 2017 fund. So we probably invested 3 or 4 companies per year through 2021. And then beyond that, we do... matchmaking with angel investors.
Nice. Awesome. Tell me specifically, this is something I picked out of your LinkedIn and a couple different places. I want to dive into AVP a little bit because you say something really interesting, which is that you believe that part of your mission, like it's part of your purpose as a firm, not just as an individual leader, is that you are there to train the future managers of venture capital in Peru and the region. So two parts of that, like, why is this so important to you? And then how do you execute on that?
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, so why it's important to me, because I think that we are still very early and very small in terms of the venture capital industry in Peru. I would be hesitant to say the industry exists. I think more realistically, we're on year 10 of a 25-year journey. So we still, each of our firms and funds, in order to be successful, we're interdependent and we need to make sure that the industry exists. So I think we need to do a lot of work besides running funds to validate the industry. So it's kind of like a long-term approach that understands our place in the industry and the early stage of our industry, not assuming that this exists. You know, I think there'll always be venture capital funds, but we need to turn funds into firms, and we need to turn firms into an industry.
There you go.
Right now in Peru, maybe they're, you know, depending on how you define a fund or fund size or active, there are 4 or 5 funds.
Okay.
Could be a little bit more, a little bit less, but I mean, that needs to be 25. Like, we're not even close.
Right.
So if we think we're close, then like we need to realize that the analysts and investment professionals in our funds or entrepreneurs we invest in, we're just the precursor for them running funds.
Gotcha.
And in order for all this to work, they need to be the future fund managers.
I love that. So when you recruit people, or when, as you say, sometimes it's the former founder turned future investor, right? You're looking for that. You're looking for that ambition, not just, hey, I want to get a job at AVP, but hey, I'd be grateful for a job at AVP because I eventually want to have my own, you know, ABC firm, or I eventually want to do this in the country. So that's part of what you're seeking.
Yeah, I think what we want to understand, like for us, like the definition of what means you're passionate. It's kind of like a long-term thinking. Like, it can be like, I love meeting with entrepreneurs and I'm passionate about supporting entrepreneurs in my life. Or, you know, I see that venture capital as a long-term future trajectory and I want to be part of that for my first job. So I think that's how we kind of, like that long-term mindset, and people that like young people that can really see that where this could be in 5 or 10 years, instead of like maybe what their parents are traditional is, right? Like, okay, just become a lawyer now or become a you know, finance person now. It's more like working toward the future. So I think that's kind of what we think about. People are really, and I think it's like usually. Like, I don't think there's venture capital jobs in Latin America. I think each of us starts working and it creates a job. So most of the people we hire, even if they're in university, they're running the entrepreneur club of the university, or they've already started a startup university. It's like they're already doing it. So it's just like, oh, just do that on our team.
Right. It's a great way to look at it.
And part of it, honestly, is like, sometimes I feel it's a little bit easy way out because we don't do a great job training our people, our team. I see it as more of like an apprenticeship where you learn by doing, but we try to manage expectations and say like, okay, if you're joining our team, like you're from the first day, you're going to be talking to founders, you need to be ready to present investment opportunities. And the way you learn is by being in calls with Elizabeth or me, or by just, you know, showing your autodidactic. And there's enough people need to, in order to be a venture capital investor or startup founder, brewery, there's like really autodidactic. You need to source information from people all the time. So that's kind of like a skill set where we can't really like train someone to do.
Yeah, that makes sense.
We try to hire people like that and set expectations that this is what's going to be
I love the idea. I just love the idea of fund to firm, kind of firm to ecosystem, ecosystem building influence entity, right? I mean, that's it seems endemic to your belief system from the get-go is we're catalysts, right? So you guys, you both clearly see AVP as something bigger serving than just like we're a fund managing return. Yes, you're managing returns for your investors, and yes, you're doing the job of investing, but you have a, you from birth have seen a bigger purpose. I love that. That's kudos to you. Every ecosystem, no matter the country and or city, needs that. That's terrific.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I think that we shouldn't, we need to be aware that that venture capital is not a, I would say it's not a, valid accepted asset class in Latin America. It's a global asset class, but I don't know. I don't think Latin American money managers take venture capital seriously. Mm. So I can't convince them to take it seriously on my own in a year. It's kind of like a 10 or 25 year thing where it's like, I want our analyst at our team in 20 years to be running the Peru pension fund. So they need to become asset managers in different asset classes and like infuse in the whole financial industry this entrepreneurial thinking or a venture capital mindset to validate that, like, this investing in entrepreneurs in Latin America is a viable, positive return investment.
That's terrific. People will tease me here oftentimes in Los Angeles, and in general, I talk like this, but I oftentimes talk about it in the context of the city when people ask, you know, what do you think is going to happen in the future or the next generation, et cetera? And I always say, well, XYZ, you know, for the next 50 to 100 years. And people laugh, and they're it's an easy retort, right? Because they come at me and they go, dude, you won't even be alive for most of that. Like, what are you? You're 56 years old. Like, what are you talking about, right? And I say, yeah, but that's how I live my life. That's what I've done in my past business. That's what I'm about to now do in this media business. Is the idea is the whole purpose every day has got to be bigger than you and I, Greg, right? Yeah. It's got to be exactly about what happens after I'm gone, right? Mm-hmm. That's what really matters. Not as you say, not so much what happens, you know, in Q4 of 2024 or Q3 of 2026. So kudos to both of you. I love that. Quick side, kind of related, but I just, the organizationally, I want to make sure we make mention of it so people are aware. Talk to us about PCAP. Talk to us about this organization that you are a founding member of and kind of what's its role alongside what you just described.
Yeah. Thank you. So PCAP is the Peru Venture Capital Association. And it came from a similar need as what we were mentioning. We have, you know, there were funds and angel investor networks in Peru, and we knew that the opportunity was bigger than us. We knew that none of us on our own could make a big enough dent as we wanted to. We saw other organizations like LAFCA or AmexCap in Mexico, RCAP in Argentina. And we wanted to follow their footsteps in Peru. And we also knew that we needed to involve the government and other stakeholders. So this is like kind of what I'm saying. Like it's not enough for each of us just to say, okay, I'm a venture capitalist. All I do is like raise money and invest in companies. No, I need to I need to connect with the government, get the government on board, make sure there's universities pulling out entrepreneurial talent. It's like all hands on deck. It takes a village, rising tide, all the cliches, rising tide, lifts all boats. Like,
good for you.
You just need to be doing everything. So I think, you know, most investors like me, we're really, you know, divide our time. Fund management is sometimes even less than half our time because things like telling the story, creating, you know, a community, and PCAP for us is this association. Is part of it. So,
amazing.
I mean, some of the needs we saw to organize PCAP was we needed to promote public policy initiatives for funds and articulate how that trickles down and supports entrepreneurs and we're the intermediaries to get more money to more entrepreneurs. It was also a way to share the story of the Peru VC opportunity. I mean, basically, the problem is each of the funds in Peru or Latin America, when we go to an investor pitch, we can't just say, okay, this is our fund, invest in us. We have to start with what's venture capital in Peru? And then like maybe the last 5 minutes is, oh, by the way, like here's AVP Ventures. So we need to work together so that those first two parts of the pitch we do as a group, like this is Peru VC. So when the meeting happens, now we're just talking about each of our specific funds and why we're different. But the size of the opportunity needs to be bigger before each of us can raise the type of funds that we want. We think the market opportunity will permit us to invest.
Sure. Yeah. You as you said, just self-describe responsibility. You've assigned it to yourself, but also just the market requires you have to tell the Peru story, right? You have to carry the flag, so to speak. So
yeah, and we have to do it together. I think PayCap is a great one. Thing I'm very happy and proud about PayCap is it really started from a genuine interest in collaboration between us. One of the things that got us going was starting to share data of transactions. We put all the it was kind of fun because, you know, people were like, well, there's not that much going on. But all of a sudden we in between all of us, crowdsourced information, starting to figure the data, numbers kind of add up and people will see, okay, yeah, there is a startup activity. There is VC investment activity happening. So that helped us to validate. And, you know, like I said, we started from this collaborative mindset where we knew we were interdependent. And I think this continues today within PayCap. I do think it's one of the special things about the Peru startup community compared to others, how we've started from this collaborative, in some ways equal standpoint.
It's important. And of course, it'll be a challenge, right, to maintain that as it grows, as the community grows, as the economy grows, as self-interest grows in people, which is inevitable. But I'm sure you're ready for that. So, all right, I want to go back to AVP for a second. So I've read some materials, some stories. I've seen a couple of beautiful stories on your site and in your social media. You guys have kind of a reputation for developing for investing in women founders and teams with women in leadership roles. One, kind of what motivated that focus? And then two, how have you seen that affect kind of your investment strategy or just the market as a whole in Lima or Peru more widely?
Okay. Well, I think it starts from the beginning from our setup in corporate governance. I mentioned Elizabeth, like she and I have been running this company. Our team is usually like diverse through our history. We have an investment committee. We have an advisory board. So even from the beginning, but also intentionally over time since then, we've maintained diversity across all the different teams, decision makers. So I think that's a necessary starting point for that. And then when we think about founding teams, we also recognize that there's an advantage to having a big complementary founding team. Maybe not, I don't mean like big, like four or five founders doing a startup, but I mean like three founders or two or three, maybe four, but each have a distinct role.
Okay.
And they're big because they're doing everything a startup needs to do.
And diversity in that founding team too. Yeah, yeah. So different points of view, different life experiences.
Yeah. Because if there's not diverse, then they're not going to be able to do all the things that they need to do. So yeah, thank you for clarifying. Not just diversity in functions, but diversity in perspective and what they bring to the table. Doing a startup is very, very hard. So there's like a mutual support, mental health component of having more people and people that can work off each other, you know, split the time at different points along the founder journey. So,
sure.
I mean, I think many of these founders we've invested in, it's like they each bring something distinct to the table that we can identify. And I think we've also invested in a few couples, male and female couples. So
that's
something that maybe like typical investors would like get away from. But for all the reasons I mentioned, we found it to be very positive. You know, those relationships have been supportive of the startup. So
that's terrific.
I think, you know, I mentioned all those things because, yeah, we have invested in a lot of women. I think we've been intentional about it, but it's not like an intentional, okay, let's find all the women and invest in all the women. No, Fair. It's like, how can we set the structure? How can we create criteria? This is a real value to have a diverse team. And, you know, maybe like one step back, like a lot of my personal motivation comes with this inequality that exists Latin America and our world.
Yep.
And I see entrepreneurship and venture capital as a mechanism for talented people to themselves, improve their lives and create solutions that will improve other people's lives. So we're not like going to the US MBA programs and like, let's invest in all these founders. We're trying to invest in like maybe people that have less access to capital and being a catalyst for them to get the capital they need to become part of those networks.
Good for you. It's good. It's as the phrase I've always used, right? It's good strategy and good business, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they can exist together. Okay. We've talked generically about the types and profiles of people that you invest in. Do you have a story or two about a couple of great teams or great companies or great founders that have come that are in your world? Do you have a couple of cool stories? We could brag on a couple of your portfolio people.
Yeah. Well, I think some fun stories I have.
And we're not picking favorites, by the way, because it's like parents. Yeah. It's like parenting. We love all our kids equally, but there's a couple cool stories that might come to mind.
Yeah, I'm not sure if they're stories, but it's kind of like the wow thing that I've seen when we invest in great companies. One of our investments is called Fitco. They have a software for fitness centers across Latin America, and this is Andrea Baba and Alex Mayor. They're the two founders. And I was just so impressed by their proactivity and regional thinking from the beginning. I mean, I mentioned Peru's kind of like a little bit, you know, it's easy. It's like we're separated, but they were from the beginning founders that were like, what the story is like when we were trying to invest in them, the money was to go to, so they could enter Mexico. But while we were talking, they were like, oh, Greg, we're already in Mexico. Like the calls were from Mexico. It's like, oh, okay. So it's like they're one step ahead of us and already doing what they said they were going to do with the money that we invest in. So I just love that. And they maintain that because they became definitely the first Peruvian startup that went through Techstars in the U.S. I think the first Latin American startup that went through the Techstars Boulder program. And they went to, so they it was like a constant mindset of learning and going to the next market, like very fast movers, always one step ahead of it. So I love that story.
That's great.
Another team that we invested in, the startup's called mTOR. This is Gabriel Pugliatti and Oriana Fuentes. They're a great founding team. And what I loved about them is that they were remote from the beginning. This is like 2017, 18. And, you know, I mean, I'm a new investor. Also, it was something I hadn't like seen before. So I learned from them about what it's like being a remote team. And they were able to,
they were remote. They were remote first, distributed before it was cool or mandated. Yeah.
And it allowed them to, they recognize that Arequipa, that's like the second largest city in Peru. They had like engineers from Arequipa that studied engineering university. And they had like, you know, they started having engineers from other countries and, you know, in Latin America, outside of Latin America. And it was, they really had to create very early on, you know, organizational structure and culture within that remote team. And they were very focused on that. So I loved how they were smart and to start remote first and also knew that it would be, needed to be part of their challenge. So they would do like offsites with the whole team once a year. They just put in best practices really early on. So kind of like Fitco, I learned from those two teams what good teams look like and what types of things they're doing. And so a lot of it's like a wow factor where I learn from them.
Terrific examples. I mean, the adventurers, right? Yep. Experimenters, getting out in front of their market, out there testing it in real time while raising money to go test it further. Yeah. And then the whole, I mean, I've been a remote first distributed guy for long before it was the thing that we had to do. And so I'm a huge fan of anybody. And you nailed it. The fact that they were smart enough and humble enough to say, okay, we've got to invest in best practices on how to communicate, how to build relationships, how to connect with each other, you know, on a regular basis, even though we're remote. Yeah. You know, when we read all these Wall Street Journal stories about all these, from these, you know, massive CEOs who own huge portfolios of real estate who are telling the world that we all need to be back in the office. I'm like, No, I was like, you don't need to be back in the office. I said, the fact that you struggle at managing your people out of the office has nothing to do with your office building portfolio. Yeah, it has to do with the fact that your management techniques were taught in like an MBA class in the 1950s.
That's true.
Right. I was like, you got to like just modernize how you manage and lead.
That's true. Yeah. Right? Mtor has a literally a whole playbook.
Good for them.
A manual for how other companies could do that, because they were that intentional, where everything's really well documented, and
it's terrific. Good for them. All right, so a couple of faster rapid fire type questions. So if investors are listening and they want to know, you know, little forecaster, Greg the forecaster. So over the next 10, 15 years or so, what are the two or three key industries in Peru specifically that you think present tremendous opportunities?
Okay. Education and financial services. So
okay,
that's the answer. Boom.
That is obvious. Yeah.
And I think, I mean, one thing we've talked about is the question is interesting, because the main sectors in Peru are mining, agriculture, export, fishing as well. So, I mean, we kind of think about when we were thinking about top-down theses, you know, we kind of were trying to test that out. Should we try to push these sectors? But really it ends up being the sectors where there's a need, where there's a social need, and where people, you know, want to and willing, and where there's gaps in society. So this is, that's why, you know, if we're trying to be too smart or like public policy dictating, we'd probably pick mining and agro, but It's really where they're. That's where the need is. So
that's a terrific, very, very, very clear. And I mean, easily, obviously, it was jumped to mind for you. It was right. It was the obvious answer right away. Yeah. And so the clarity of the opportunity is terrific. So follow on to that. And now we're into our closing section. So what two or three pieces of advice would you give to those looking to invest in Peruvian or Latin American startups, particularly from the perspective of like mitigating risks or maximizing their returns?
Okay, great. Well, I would suggest thinking about as in bottoms up. Right? That's what I do. But unless you have like a really specific sector, being bottoms up for me means talking with entrepreneurs and letting the opportunity and thesis come out of what's already there. And it means you're talking to a lot of entrepreneurs before you invest. So I think that's what I would recommend. Talk with entrepreneurs and have your investment thesis kind of come out of that.
So bottoms up approach, and be open-minded, a little bit flexible with your investment thesis going in.
Yeah. And I would also say that one thing that's helped me is commitment to certain communities. Like, you kind of explore the startup community, explore the different funds and initiatives, but it has helped me to kind of pick a couple to commit to. For me, I guess it was maybe Endeavor Peru, Utec Ventures, PayCap, and then like be a consistent member of that community, because all of us need consistency, and we need consistent members. So, you know, in the beginning, I think want to spray and pray, get all the information, meet as many people you can.
That's good. Say the same thing.
Once you figure out what's out there, pick a couple funds or entities where either you put money in or you invest your time in a consistent way. So you say, I'm part of this. And I think it's valuable. Those type of investors for us are very, very, very valuable. And it's kind of what keeps the industry going.
No, I would totally agree. I think it's always, you know, relationships over networking. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right. So yes, you can network when you land on the ground and you're trying to figure out what's what.
Yeah.
I used to say in when I was in Chile, we developed this kind of model looking around the different countries in the region. And as I would come in to visit a country or a city for the first time through an entry point of a relationship or a referral, mm-hmm. I would always say, like, how many people, like, just like as if it was an equation, like how many people would you think it would take to like completely wire the economy of X country or X city? Right. And then that gives you a sense of, okay, there, you know, I used to, at that point in Chile in 2017, 2018, I famously said I thought it was Chile, the Chilean economy as a whole, not just the startup economy, was probably about 50 to 60 people total. Like if you could map those 50 to 60 people, Like you literally had the country wired, right? Whereas maybe Mexico at that time, we used to say Mexico was maybe like 150 people, mm-hmm. right? Because bigger geographic country, bigger, more diverse country, more industry, et cetera. But then to your point, don't try and then be everything to everybody. Yeah. Pick those relationships inside of that map. Yeah. Inside, pick your couple of organizations that are the organizations that resonate with you or whatever they might be. That's terrific advice.
Stick with an organization if it's not perfect or if you see another shiny organization that's just starting. Stick with it a couple more months or a year or two, because I think it's a learning experience to go through that. And it's also a way to support the organizations or funds.
Yeah. Plant some seeds and let the trees grow a little bit, right? Okay, last question. And you kind of answered this before, because your thesis, as I heard it, was, you're not really getting a career job in venture capital in Latin America yet, right? You're jumping into the industry and you're finding a place to help. But let's be old wise men here for the young kids that are going to university or getting their MBAs in the US and they're from Peru and they want to come back to Peru and they want to get into venture capital. Yep. What might be one or two steps that you would recommend to that young person to try and find a career in venture capital in Peru?
Okay. One step is to talk with entrepreneurs, try to become an advisor of an entrepreneur or put together, talk to 10 or 20 entrepreneurs. One of the benefits of this big capital gap we have is that the bar to get to the point where you're talking to great entrepreneurs is not very high in Latin America. Really, any US MBA student that puts their hands up, 80% of entrepreneurs in Latin America will be interested in having a half an hour conversation with them and treating as a potential investor, which they probably are. So if they're interested in venture capital. Yeah. So if you position yourself, even if you're undergraduate MBA, as an advisor, potential investor, that will start conversations. If you're genuine, authentic about what your position is and honest, that you can still have those conversations and you'll learn from that. But also, like, if you want to get a job, like within the first half an hour of an interview, it's going to be, what's your favorite startup? What startup you invest in? So you can't just say Rappi. You have to say, well, I've talked to these. you have to show someone that you've been intentional about, like, I've done the work. I found these startups. This is why I like this one. And you can really only do that if you've been talking to startups. So I think
that's the key. I love it. The practical, it's the, we've turned venture capital in Peru into like a trade apprenticeship. Yeah. I love this. This is the way. That's terrific, buddy. That's it, man. That's like, this has been a blast. I can't thank you enough. It's been fun. As you said, we've been supporters and encouragers of each other for years. You know, I'm a huge fan of you and your work, but also of the market and the opportunity in Peru. Right. Before we literally close this out, let's make sure, how can folks, for any purpose, mm-hmm. investment, LPs interested in what you're doing, young guys want to get involved in the program, whatever it is, how can people find you or connect with you? And then how can people find and or connect with the firm?
Okay, thank you. Well, my email is greg@avpventures.com. On LinkedIn, if you type in Greg Mitchell Peru, I think I come up. You probably have to type in Peru, but once you type in Greg Mitchell Peru, I probably would come up there. And then our firm, AVP Ventures, that's in LinkedIn. And our website is avpventures.com. So you can, you mentioned on our website, we developed our website to share founder stories. You can go to our website and read about stories about founders that we've invested. And I appreciate what you're doing, Rob. I think I would love to be in the same office as you every day, but I know that for us to do what we're doing, I need to be in Lima and you need to be in Los Angeles and we all need to be in different places for this to work out. So it's fun to connect with virtually and have this come.
No, I appreciate it, man. I love it. Thank you so much. We're spreading the joy by being remote, by being as distributed as we can.
That's right.
This is terrific. Thanks, buddy.
Okay, thank you.
And as always, we thank you so much for listening. Today's show was recorded in Los Angeles and produced by Deanna Bernal in Mexico City. You can always find, like, follow, subscribe, and share our show on Spotify, Apple, or via any popular podcasting platform. as well as find the new video version of our show now available on our YouTube channel at Entrepreneurial Thinkers. And as always, you can follow along our various social media platforms for fun and informative clips and content at Entrepreneurial Thinkers on most platforms. And if you'd like to connect with me, your host, you can find me at I Am Rob Ryan on just about any social media platform. Gracias and thank you.